I want to recognize one of our sponsors. Have you ever felt like a lone wolf in life, unable to engage in chats around the barbecue since you're doing things that aren't the norm? Enter GoBundance, a place where driven entrepreneurs, CEOs, or investors who are beginning to experience an interesting phenomenon with more success in life, the feeling of a gap forming between ourselves and many of the people around us. One day, we wake up and find ourselves surrounded by people who may no longer see the world the same way we do. As the trend continues, we become more isolated and even find ourselves holding back from talking about things we are most excited about with friends, family, or coworkers. GoBundance was created for those who choose to live bigger and more fulfilled lives of impact. This tribe is for men and women who want to experience world-class adventure, bucket list trips, high-minded conversations, authentic relationships, and an environment to learn and grow with like-minded people. GoBundance is a tribe where you are able to share your successes, struggles, ambitions, and failures without being judged. It's a framework to strengthen your journey in becoming a better man, husband, father, friend, and entrepreneur. It is the place men come together to live epic lives and to grab life big. If you want to learn more, go to GoBundance.com and hit the apply button to join the tribe and tell them the Cashflow Ninja sent you. Welcome to the Cashflow Ninja, the podcast sharing how to create and grow income streams and manage, multiply, and protect your wealth in the new economy. Are you tired of trading your time for money? Do you desire freedom today instead of retirement in 10, 20, or 30 years? I'm MC Lobsher, and this is the Cashflow Ninja. This is Cashflow Ninja. I'm MC Lobsher. Thank you so much for joining me for another episode of the Cashflow Ninja podcast. Everything Cashflow Ninja is at cashflowninja.com. Over 850 podcast episodes, tools, resources, programs. And of course, you can grab a copy of my book, The 21 Best Cashflow Niches, Creating Wealth in the Best Alternative Cashflow Investments, available at cashflowninja.com or on amazon.com. When you grab a copy, please screenshot a proof of your purchase and send it to my team at info@cashflowninja.com, and we will give you access to a digital version of the book, an audio version of the book, a curated library of Cashflow Ninjas talking about the niches that I share in the book, and more bonus goodies. I've got a fantastic episode for you today. In today's show, I'm joined by a returning guest on the Cashflow Ninja podcast, Dr. Mark Farber. Now, Dr. Mark Farber is a billionaire that lives in Thailand. He was featured, by the way, in the book that Tony Robbins wrote, Money Master the Game. And his chapter is titled, The Billionaire They Call Dr. Doom. Now, Dr. Mark Farber, of course, tells it like it is, shoots from the hip. I always appreciate my conversations with him because he doesn't hold anything back. And I'm sure he's not going to hold anything back today. Dr. Farber, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me on your program.
It's so good to see you. I've always enjoyed our conversations. What have you been up to?
Well, I work and I study. Now I'm studying more Roman history. And I started to study music a while ago, but now I had to interrupt it a bit because I had a lot to study about also philosophy, which interests me. There are many things in life that can interest you. And as you age, you have more time maybe. But also the writing takes a lot of my time. But I cannot write about what everybody else is saying. So if you want to write something unusual, then you also have to study and prepare it well. And this is time consuming.
Yep. What are some of the interesting things about Roman history that intrigues you, and some of the things that we can learn in the times that we're living in today?
Yeah, I'm still studying. But remarkably, you know, the Roman Empire had numerous periods of crisis and civil wars. And then by accident or by the quality of the Roman leadership, they had from time to time a great leader like Aurelian or Vespasian and so forth. And they had also great generals, you know, generals who were sitting in an armchair somewhere in the capital and doing F nothing. But they were at the battles in charge, and the very good ones actually sometimes went to the front line to fight. This is the different world we live in, with the Vogues being concerned about whether you should have women or whatnot in the army. The Romans actually did something, and they had a tough job because the Germanic tribes, the Alemans and so forth, they were, I mean, really vicious fighters and cruel, as well as the Parthians and the Palmyrians and so forth. So they needed courage and organization and endurance, all the qualities of virtuous people, which seem to be absent nowadays in the Western world, especially among the dumped down politicians, cowards. That's what they are.
Fake money, fake governments, fake leaders, fake generals. We've got a lot of fake going on. And to your point, you know, I've had some friends that have seen and have conversations with folks that have seen combat actually in a military situation. It is not like in the movies. I think once you go through that experience, it's a completely different experience, you know, that few people experience in life, and they will have a completely different perspective on sending other people's children to go and fight in battles once they've been through it themselves, right?
Yes, that's why most American presidents who had a military career were actually very reluctant to go into war situations because they had experienced firsthand the atrocities of war and the casualties that self, you know, when you read battle reports, they talk about how many soldiers died on this side and how many legions were lost on the other side and so forth. But the civilian population, the damage caused to the civilian population is never really mentioned. And this is astronomical. That's horrendous. Thing I have to say, you know, when you look at the, and I think it's very interesting to look at military history also, because the courageous armies, they fought sometimes in difficult terrain, but they fought outside cities, you know, army against army.
Yep.
Of course, when, say, the Mongols invaded northern China and then southern China and also the Western countries, the difference was that they were nomadic tribes. Nomadic tribes tend to breed warriors. Cities tend to breed intellectuals and businessmen and so forth and merchants. And so the cities, of course, whether it was Baghdad at that time or Samarkand or whatever, they all had fortification walls. And then, of course, the wars were fought around these walls. Of course, the Mongols were very smart. They adopted to siege weapons, catapults, and so they got them from the Chinese. they themselves didn't have these weapons, but they copied them and they had they incorporated in their country or captured Chinese engineers who had all this technology. And so they brought it along. And when they arrived at the city walls, they told the city, well, either you open the city to us and nothing will happen to you. You will have to then be vassals of us and pay tributes and so forth. Or we will flatten your city. There was no distinction between civilians and warriors. Flatten the city. That's what they did with Baghdad, which was at the time one of the largest or the largest city in the world when the Mongol invasion occurred.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting to look at military history and, you know, conquest and empire, the rise of empire, the reaching the peak of empire, you know, of empire, and then sort of the decay of empire. It seems that's a pretty good way to look at where we're at right now, right?
Yes, but that's why I said, you know, I'm convinced that the peak of Western civilization, of Western civilization's prosperity has been reached, and that we will go down. In other words, your children will not live your lifestyle, and my children will not live the lifestyle I had. They will have harder times. But there can be leaders that can retard the relative decline. We are in a relative decline. We have to acknowledge that. If you look at the last 20, 30 years, it's clear that the civilizations like the Indian civilization or the Cynic civilization, the Chinese, have grown faster than we have, and they've built, they are competitor to us. But because they are competitors, is the right approach to destroy them and go to war against them? You understand? Mm-hmm. Or is the right approach to understand we had, say, the Roman civilizations, and then other people came up, and we had the Byzantine Empire, and then it was captured by the Ottomans in 1453. And these things are inevitable. This happens. You can retard it and you can inflict more pain, but maybe the best strategy is to try to find sort of peaceful solutions to the problem, keeping in mind a sense of justice and wisdom and courage, as well as moderation. You know, if you have these kind of situations where an empire comes up and you're in the declining empire, I don't think it's a very good strategy to approach the problem with extreme arrogance and with the view that only you should have spheres of influence and that you should dominate the world and nobody else should have any say. And that is unfortunately the view of NATO and the US and many European countries.
I want to recognize one of our sponsors. Recently, I had a very engaging and exciting podcast conversation that is one of the most downloaded episodes of this year with my friend Louis O'Connor. The subject was owning rare earth metals as tangible assets. It's the same paradigm as owning gold or silver, but instead, you own industrial-grade, high-quality, rare earth metals that you are purchasing from a premier industry supplier. And the exit for the investor is also guaranteed. One of the most interesting things about this asset class is that rare earths outperform the stock market and precious metals for the past 5 years. Unfortunately, there is only a limited amount available to private investors. If you would like to find out more about this exciting and limited opportunity, then please go directly to the website www.strategicmetalsinvest.com or email them at info@strategicmetalsinvest.com.
Yeah, it seems that, you know, what creates a great society and a civilization is essentially, you know, the rule of law, private property, and producing and creating things that other people want. So the city state or the region becomes wealthy because of the production and the creation and the creativity. And then the expansion mode starts. And now you're sending, you know, militaries across the world and conquering other areas and states and so forth. And now you're plundering rather than just producing and creating, right? So now you're
I agree.
Spread widely. You have a huge footprint and all these adventures. If you look at history, we don't have to look too far back. It costs you a lot of money, right?
It costs you a lot of money, and most of the conquests so far post-Second World War have failed.
Yep.
Complete failures. And then it also depends, you know, how much does anything cost? It's like nice to say, well, I want clean energy. Okay, let's have clean energy. But if to produce the clean energy is more polluting and costs much more than what we already have, it may not make sense. You know, kind of a complete illusion that we can have supply our energy with windmills. I've never seen such a stupid idea in anyone's mind. A windmill may be suitable for one area and for some use, but you cannot replace fossil fuels with windmills. It's kind of a really dumb idea of the environmentalists. And then the same people, the environmentalists, say, well, we'll have to go to battery. Well, to produce a battery, I can tell you how much resources are necessary to produce just one battery. To use just one battery needs so much oil and energy for the mining requirements and so forth. And then the question is also, what do you do with the battery once it no longer works? So you have to think through these things. It's like maybe the West says, oh, we have to take out Putin. Putin is not going to be with us forever. In 10, 15 years, he's gone anyway. I'll be gone, and most other people also. And so, you know, whether it's worth it to force the issue and what the cost is on the Western world in terms of increase in food prices, increase in energy costs, and so forth, and the sufferings of people, both Russian soldiers and Ukrainian soldiers, and also the loss of prestige for the US. You know, now they said, well, we're thinking about whether we should allow Russia to pay its debts, you know, the interest on the debts. Yeah, if you're a leader of India, China, or Russia, or anyone, any leader in the world, and you sit there and you hear a dumb secretary of the Treasury in the US tell you, we're thinking about whether we will allow you to pay the interest, then you scratch your head. Well, do I want to be in a situation where I depend on the dumb ass in the Treasury Department to tell me what I can do? If I want to pay the interest on my debts, well, should be able to do it. This is not the job of the United States.
Yep.
But by doing that, they actually alienate a lot of people. And, you know, Biden tells, I've united NATO. That I'm not so sure about. And number two, he split the world into people that are the vassals of the U.S., And the rest of the world, which is more than 80% of the world's population, who scratches their head and says, well, we have no problem with Ukraine. We have no problem with Russia. Why should we impose any sanctions on them?
Yep. A lot of great points here. So I'm gonna the Russian sanctions. I'm gonna come back to that in a second, because one of the things that I also wanted to bring it back to, and you just summarized it perfectly, was, you know, once you start producing, creating, and now all of a sudden you're sending the military to go conquer and plunder, then all of a sudden, while you need money to keep funding all of these military adventures, they're not cheap. So now you have to debase the currency, just like all these empires do. And all of a sudden, with the debasement, because there's no honest money, now all of a sudden, all the honesty is out of society along with the money, the moral decay starts. And it's interesting, you know, just looking at this, how then it's almost like two reality is sort of created at that point in those empires, just from a thinking perspective. And what I mean by that is we have the physical world where 1 + 1 = 2. It's just math. It's physics. If I throw a ball up in the air, I know that ball is going to come back down because of gravity. But it's almost another alternative reality, because these empires that have expanded have lost all of the, I would say, the honesty in the society. There's moral decay. There's corruption. All this stuff. They've had it so good that they now think, oh, we could just make up stuff. And that'll, like, to your point with the windmills, like trying to replace electricity with those windmills. And then again, which is extremely comical in just, you know, being from South Africa to see this, this is extremely comical how you have now this ESG things that's now, it's corporate nomenclature. Everybody's talking about environmental and societal and governance. And, oh, you know, Tesla's got a great ESG score, which means you're woke and green. But it's a battery company, as you said. Now, anybody that knows anything about batteries and what goes into batteries, understand the different elements that goes in there, understand that it goes to mining. Most of it is mined, and most of it is mined. A lot of it in Africa, especially in the Congo, if you go into coltan and copper and all that kind of stuff, which I think if anybody has seen that, it's not a pretty green, a very green and very woke operation, mining, especially in developing countries. So it's interesting to then see, and it's almost like where we're at, like you have these alternate realities that exist in the West, the physical reality, the 1 + 1 = 2, and then you have the 1 + 1 = 3. And on the other side, you've got China, which produce and create goods and services to the world that has seen this rise. So it's just interesting to see the empire cycle sort of kind of repeat itself, right?
It's unbelievable. I mean, we have everything in terms of knowledge. You can watch YouTube. They have all the documentaries about all the history of the world, of every society and so forth. People should know something, but no. The government says something, they all say, oh, yes. Vaccines are good, great. And then they go after the people who don't vaccine. They are the evils, the conspiracy theorists and so forth. Putin is evil. Okay, Putin is evil. That's, you know. But it's what you said incredible. Is, of course, true. And there was a moral decline in every society that became successful and wealthy. But in my opinion, the Roman Empire lasted such a long time because they didn't have a central bank.
Mm.
You know, yep. The big depreciation of the Roman currency began in the 4th century, really towards the end. We have started to print massive amount of money since the 1980s, and even more so in the last 20 years. And in my view, this has contributed to a decline in morals where everybody kind of adores wealth, you know, this the cult around the golden calf of wealth and of prestigious people who have wealth and so forth. They're the most admired people. But when you look at like the trial of Johnny Depp and Amber, you have to ask yourself, if this is the high society of the successful people, what kind of smear and dirt and viciousness exists in that society? This is not something that I should aspire to in any ways.
Yeah, it's almost like demons are running amok around us now, because the things that we are force-fed in media is... I mean, it's just, I look at this and I go, this is insanity. I mean, it's almost, you know, the example in the Roman Empire that folks are using is like, you know, the craziness that exists to in comparison with the craziness that now was it, are we almost at that time where was it Caligula that tried to make his horse a senator or something?
Yes, but you look at some senators today in the US, I think maybe a horse would be better.
or a horse's backside, right?
I mean, I can tell you, I don't think the vice president of the US would be worse off with a horse than with Kamala Harris.
Yep.
And the horse might look better. We would have to ask Catherine the Great of Russia. She had a great love for horses.
Yeah, it's the world is a stage, right? The world is a stage, yeah, and the actors exactly. are, you know, I think most people have started to realize that the folks that are on TV and the leaders, this is a stage. I mean, it's absolute, and it's, you know what? I think it was Gerald Celente that said, "Politics is show business for ugly people," and it certainly seems that way. So, your take on you mentioned Russia and the Ukraine, the war in the Ukraine with Russia, and you mentioned the sanctions, which is pretty interesting. How they're splitting the world now essentially into two factions. Which is still under the umbrella of the U.S. and NATO. And now we've got the Eastern faction, which is Russia, China, and some of the BRIC countries. It's pretty interesting to see this roll out with this. Essentially, I mean, we are at war. We have a world war. This is financial warfare, right? Economic and financial warfare.
The trade war started a long time ago.
Yep.
But you know, it wasn't felt so badly, but we are in an economic war, and you never know. World War One was completely unnecessary. And I would maintain that World War Two could have been avoided, but the US wanted war, and Hitler, he was prepared for war, as well as Stalin, so they all went to war, but it could have been avoided through diplomacy.
Yep.
But if you look at American politicians, diplomacy does not exist. Diplomacy is about negotiation and compromises. Yep. But when has an American politician ever compromised? Well, I can tell you when he was paid a lot of money under the table. Then is a different story. But if that is not happening, and I think, you know, that the US provoked Russia and they wanted war with Putin. They want it.
Yep.
And I think they want war with China. I think they want it.
Yeah, what is the quote? A war is the health of the state. And to your point, was it Hillary Clinton then too in 2016 in her, you know, in her presidential run? She was even talking about at that stage, Syria was sort of the theater that this played out, but they wanted a no-fly zone essentially in Syria back in 2016. So you would have ended up already with the US facing off with Russia in Syria in 2016. Which then now it looks like, you know, with the how the situation plays out. And a lot of folks, I mean, they don't report, you know, the treaties that were signed. What is it? The Bucharest Accord and yes. all these treaties that have been signed after the when the Cold War was done. Nobody brings that into the conversation, you know, the conversation in just in covering this. You know, you're going to enjoy.
It's completely biased.
I want to take a moment to recognize one of our sponsors. One of the best cash flow niches might surprise you. It's the cash flow machine called Resort Hospitality. Our friends and partners, Melanie and Josh McCallan from Accountable Equity, are so prolific at creating cash flow for their investors that I had to include them twice in my book, The 21 Best Cash Flow Niches. Something that really impresses me about this dynamic group is that more than just creating cash flow with these historic trophy resort properties, they are also creating a powerful investor community with an Accountable Equity. Investors not only get to enjoy cash flow from beautiful resorts, but can enjoy the resorts and attend Learn and Grow investor summits where like-minded accredited investors gather to learn from keynote speakers, as well as get updates on their projects and meet the growing team that makes all of this possible. You can learn more how the asset class of resort hospitality is a great way to diversify your multifamily investments by downloading the ebook, The 10 Steps to Build Wealth with Resort Hospitality Assets at accountableequity.com. You're going to enjoy this point. So I don't watch any of the news. So I go to the gym last night and I see that they've got two news channels on in the background in the gym. Uh-huh. And I can't hear anything. I just kind of look at it and see. But, you know, again, this is kind of prime time, I would say, like 6 o'clock. You know, people are just getting back from work, probably in their houses and turning on TVs. And who do you have on these TVs in the U.S.? It's all like former CIA, you know, people. So it's all these guys that literally their job is to sell you war. That's what they're selling right there. And I didn't even have to listen to it. I could just see who it is, who they're bringing on these shows. And I just kind of looked at this and go, this is what people are seeing. They don't understand the treaties, the accords that were signed, all these things. I mean, you don't have
knowledge of them.
Yeah. Go
and
ahead.
A lot of things, you know, happen because in politics, say you and I, we don't know what Putin and President Xi Jinping of China agreed upon during the Olympics.
Yep.
We don't know. But for sure, some agreements were decided upon. And in my view, a lot of things that when the Berlin Wall fell, there were some oral agreements between the US and Russia. The US has broken all these agreements. And the pattern of the US, if you look at the last, say, 20 years, they went into Iraq, they went into Syria, they went into Libya, they went into Afghanistan, and all of it was, you ask yourself, for what? For what? And then they said, Iraq has weapons of mass destruction. The UN representative, I think his name was Blix, he repeatedly said, no, they looked and searched everywhere. Iraq didn't have weapons of mass destruction. And by the way, the U.S. has weapons of mass destruction, and they have labs, biological labs in Ukraine, and they finance a lab in China and so forth and so on. You know, when you hear all this, you ask yourself, well, who is actually the evil person? The average American doesn't want war.
No.
Most ordinary people, whether it's South Africa or Congo or wherever it is. Nobody wants war, except politicians, except and some crazy generals and commanders and so forth. But in general, people want to be left alone. But that is not good enough for the politicians, for the leaders. And a lot of wars were started for the distraction of problems, domestic problems, or there were nations that actually went to war for money. The Mongols was an army, a professional army, and then they robbed one country after the other. They never built really anything, but they just went to war to get money and wealth. And women, this is always overlooked. Former civilizations, they went to war to kill men and get women.
Yep.
And slaves.
The spoils of war. And to your point, every single country, you Ukrainians, Russians, you know, South Africa. I grew up during apartheid in South Africa. Political leaders did not represent the people, how the people felt. It was crazy people. You know, and there's crazy people now everywhere. You pick your country, and they do not represent the people. Because the people just want to build the best lives for themselves, their families. They want to live in great communities and contribute to their communities. And, you know, and especially folks that listen to us want to build businesses and so forth. So I think we've gotten to the point almost where they need a big war because nobody is liked. I mean, you pick your country and the leader of that country cannot even walk the street without being booed. Whether it's Trudeau in Canada, whether it's Macron in France, whether it's, you know, Johnson in the UK.
Australia. They're all autocrats. I think democracy has completely failed in the sense that it hasn't established governments that look after the interest of the majority, but it looks after its own interests. The king of a country usually was probably a better leader because he knew if I continuously disappoint my people, they will cut off my throat.
You know, let's talk about the economics and the money a little bit. You know, the U.S. is still the reserve currency of the world. What does this look like? Because you keep seeing folks talk about CBDCs, central bank digital currencies, which we've talked about on the show. We keep hearing about, well, we have to go digital, and they've talked about this, and cash is bad and so forth. And then obviously now you've got two economic factions in the world. What do you see? How does this all play out? Is this chaos to bring in a new order, or what does it look like?
Well, I think you bring up a very interesting question, which also relates to the U.S., say, expropriating, stealing reserves by central banks. You know what I mean? For me, as a social observer, I think one of the most horrible things that the U.S. did in the last 30, 40 years is to steal the foreign exchange reserves of Afghanistan. I mean, here you have a country that is truly dirt poor. Now, we're not arguing here whether the Taliban is good or bad and so forth. I'm just saying the country is dirt poor. And people are really, in some cases, struggling to get food. And here the wealthy U.S. takes the foreign exchange reserves away. Then they accuse every other country of human rights abuse. That is the hypocritical nature of the U.S. and not of each American, but of the government. And then one of the long-term consequences of all this, also the expropriation of the oligarchs. Let's say you are a Chinese, you have money. Say it is with an American bank or with a bank that is friendly towards America, like Britain Australia, actually, they're not friendly. They're subsidiaries, they're vassals of the US. And then you ask yourself, well, what happens to my assets if we go to war? Conversely, if you are a Chinese and you have you live in the US, you have an American passport, but you're ethnically Chinese, the way in the Second World War, we had the Japanese in the US, in total about 500,000 people. Most of them, they had an American passport, but ethnically they were Japanese. They were sent to internment camps, but not Four Seasons luxury resorts. You understand? These mm-hmm. resorts were not exactly of the highest quality, not what we are accustomed to.
Yep.
And so every citizen asks himself, who has money and assets? Well, assets can go down, you know, stocks can go down, gold can go down, bonds can go down, real estate can go down and up and so forth. But what's the point of me of having a lot of money and then one day one of these bureaucrats arbitrary, despite the fact that you pointed out earlier on that we have property rights and that this is a sanctuary of accumulating wealth is to have well-established property rights has been established by most economists as a fact. But then the government comes and says, well, this is no longer yours. It's frozen. You know, so you ask yourself, and then countries, they have foreign exchange reserve. Now, one consequence, I don't know exactly what happened, but the Saudis, for some reason, they are kind of in dispute with the US. I don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe because they are establishing diplomatic relations with Iran. Who knows? But I don't know for sure why. But suddenly, the atmosphere between the US and Saudi has soured meaningfully. And you get all these countries that have large foreign exchange reserves in dollars. I tell you, I think the consequence long term of the conflict in Ukraine and the reaction of the US and the authoritarian and autocratic way they treat everybody will be that the dollar will no longer be a reserve currency.
So you're thinking this might go to, you know, like a basket of currencies eventually, or there might be a different world reserve asset on which would be at the center of this new world, monetary system.
Yes, I think so. Maybe it will be something like a cryptocurrency, but I think the safer bet would be to say we'll move probably to a system where gold will have a more important role to play as a monetary asset. But I'm not sure about that, but I'm sure that the end of the dollar supremacy is about to occur. Now, recently, as you know, the dollar was strong. But frequently, something is strong before it breaks, such as we saw with the meme stocks, with GameStop and AMC and all this garbage.
Yep.
The fact that something is strong doesn't imply that it will be strong long term. So I would say it will be interesting to see what happens. But let's assume I'm a citizen. I live in Thailand, as you know. And I have assets. They are parked in Swiss banks in Switzerland and related companies in Switzerland. And then I have assets in Asia. Then I ask myself, well, one day the US could say, well, we expropriate Swiss people of their assets because they didn't join the EU or they or neutral or whatever it is. If they could do it with the Russian oligarchs, they can do it with anyone. You understand?
Yep.
They can say, we don't like white South Africans.
Yeah, you can at that stage make up, you could pick your target. Like you said, it was a pivotal moment where all of a sudden foreign reserves assets were frozen and seized, and now they're going after, you know, Russian oligarchs. They were fine with them buying soccer teams in the UK and bringing their money to your country, but now all of a sudden, just like the wind turning, it's turned. Now all of a sudden, you know, yes, where's the rule of law, the private property, the contracts, which holds basically wealth building together, right?
Yes, but the worst part is that the public applauds. You understand? The public should think, if they can take it away from the Russian, they can take it away one day from me, or they can do something else to me. Because it's basically, we have a constitution and we have property rights. And the moment you allow someone to buy a soccer club in the UK, or you allow him to buy a property, you give him a stamp of approval.
Yep.
Bought that property. If he's a criminal, if he goes and murders his wife 10 days later, you can't take his property away. This is a different story. You understand?
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with the crime. So I think this expropriation and seizure of assets of the Russians morally is not correct. And from a legal system point of view, is completely incorrect. Now, you may say, well, you know, they are evil people, the Russians, and these oligarchs all stole money. It would be difficult to prove that they stole the money. They had companies which they built. By the way, you know, Israel is reluctant to condemn anyone because most of the oligarchs are actually Jewish. So that is something to consider also. So there are lots of issues involved. And I'd say, I don't know who is more evil, the American oligarchs or the Russian oligarchs. Whoever is rich is evil or has done something bad.
I want to take a moment to recognize one of our sponsors. My friend Dave Zook says, you can be conventional or you can be wealthy. Pick one. At The Real Asset Investor, Dave and his team bring their investors high-yield investment opportunities across several asset classes for cash flow, tax impact, and equity growth. He and his team are one of the top five ATM operators in the country, and they have an investment opportunity available to accredited investors right now in the ATM space. To learn more about their ATM funds that produce tax-free cash flow, visit therealassetinvestor.com. You know, I jokingly say we don't have oligarchs here. We have titans of industry and philanthropists, right, in the U.S. But to your point, if you flip the script, imagine, you know, Jeff Bezos's yacht is seized in the Mediterranean and his, you know, property is seized on the Mediterranean because of something that the U.S. government did. I mean, there would be, I mean, chaos, you know, and Elon Musk, which cannot stay out of the news. Some of his assets get seized somewhere overseas because of something that the U.S. government did. I mean, it's kind of, if you flip the script, people would say, this is crazy. I mean, there's no rule of law when you do that.
I mean, it would be an interesting example. You know, we have now in Asia something that really annoys the U.S., Australia, and Britain. The Chinese, they made a security pact with a tiny island. It's actually a group of 1,000 islands called the Solomon Islands. They are about 1,400 miles away from Australia. One of them is called Guadalcanal. It was a scene of a serious naval battle during World War II. But anyway, the Chinese have this security pact. Now, the Australians and the US and Britain think it's an aggression towards Australia and towards the US. Well, the US has naval bases all across Asia or everywhere. But if China has one, then it's an aggression. This is the different perspective in the world. It's interesting that in Africa, practically no country has joined the sanctions.
Yep.
I'm not aware of any country that has joined the sanctions.
Yeah, world without diplomacy, rule of law is breaking down. What are some of the things that you see that is interesting, some of the developments that you're aware of, before we get into a couple of things that folks can do in this hectic world,
well,
I would say.
You know, the other big thing in the world, among all the smoke that occurs and the fake news that occurs every day and so forth, if you look at the last, say, 60 years, and we start after the Second World War, then we come to the 80s. 1980 to today is 40 years. This is a period during which everywhere in the world, I'm not saying everywhere in every country, but everywhere in the world, there was asset inflation. Prices of land went up, prices of homes went up irregularly, but they went up. Prices of stocks went up, and even bonds rallied. And collectibles went up, every piece of shit art went up, and so forth, you know. Whatever, every collectible. And now we come to an age, in my opinion, of a general wealth destruction. I think as an investor, the idea should no longer be, how do I make money? But it should be, how do I lose the least? Because say, if you have money, you have to start with a million. All your neighbors make $1 million. In other words, they have a performance of 100%, say, in 5 years, and you're only up 50%, then you are relatively impoverished compared to your neighbors. The neighbors are up 100%, you're up 50%. You should start to think now, if my neighbors are down 80%, how can I be down just 20%? This is the issue in my view.
So it's more about protection and protecting what you have instead of just trying to, you know, to grow, essentially.
I think the age of accumulation of wealth has turned negative. There will be some people like, you know, there are always war profiteers that make money during war times, and we know roughly who they are. But I'd say if we had a declining interest rate structure since 1980, and interest rates went down much more than anyone ever thought possible, they were also at the lowest level in the history of mankind, in the recorded history of mankind. I don't know, before it was recorded, they probably didn't have money and interest, but say in the recorded history of mankind, which starts, say, 3,000-4,000 years before Christ, this is the lowest level of interest rates we ever had. And now I think we are at the turning point, regardless. They will go up regardless of central bank interventions. And in this environment, assets tend to not perform particularly well. I'm not saying they will go straight down. And, you know, maybe you have a house because of its favorable location. The price will not go down a lot. It could even go up. But in general, say, in this environment, maybe all houses go down somewhat, some a lot and some less. Depends also on the country you're in because of taxation. The government can expropriate you through taxation. They can impose taxes on your house that are so high that the maintenance of your house becomes prohibitive. A lot of castles in Europe have been abandoned because of maintenance. The maintenance was too expensive.
Yep.
Or taxation, or both. So these are all factors to consider. And I think the environment to make big capital gains is over. We can live happily, you know, we can do things that are not driven by the desire of greed and accumulation and wealth. We can do other things, and we can live very happily with less. And for most well-to-do people, whether they have, you know, a billion or half a billion, doesn't matter to their style and to the quality of wines they drink. The problem, and this we have to see very clearly, is that the current situation of hardship will be the hardest on poor people. And the politicians don't care about them, so it will be twice as hard. But that can then lead to social unrest. I mean, a big time social unrest, not small, can lead to revolutions like the Bolshevik Revolution, which was extremely cruel, and so forth. So the environment, in my view, will not be very pleasant. And part of it was created by central banks' manipulation of interest rates. And that is now called into question by the power of the market. The Fed in America has only increased the Fed fund rate to 0.5%. But the 10-year Treasury note went from less than 0.6% to now over 3%. You know, it's a more than fourfold increase in rates. That would be the starting gate of, say, interest at 10% and you go to 40%. You know, this is a big, big move.
Yeah, so that plays into the the housing market, especially at a certain price point, right?
The mortgage rates in America, they've doubled. So if someone bought a house, $5 million US, and he borrowed 80%, say he borrowed $4 million, whether you pay 1%, $40,000 a year, or 3%, $120,000, makes a big difference. Especially if the dumb bureaucrats increase your property tax at the same time.
Which that's probably to your point, that's going to come too. That's how the middle gets squeezed out and hollowed out.
They get squeezed out, and then we have the affordability issue. Young people don't have the money to buy a decent property because they've gone up so much. I don't know about South Africa, but in the U.S. and in Europe, this is a real problem.
Yep, huge problem. And in the U.S., you've got the BlackRock and Blackstone. I mean, all these groups buying now up houses.
They made their money from the crisis in 2008. Everything collapses. Ordinary people were squeezed out of their homes, expropriated because they couldn't pay the additional down payment on the house because the value had collapsed. BlackRock came in and bought it.
Yep.
Well done, Federal Reserve. I tell you, the system is rigged and the outcome is not going to be good. It's impossible because never has a society of elites or rich people voluntarily given up what they have. On the contrary, they become even more greedy. And if they see that things will go bad one day, they'll take everything they can before they run off.
So strategies for people to protect during this very turbulent time because it's turbulent now. And I say the fun hasn't even started yet. It's going to get wild. What are some things that folks can do from a protection standpoint?
Well, I think we have, say, in the U.S. stock market, very high leverage. The margin debt was at the record high and is now coming down, but there's still a long way to go until we are at the, say, typical level of margin. And some stocks have been cut in half and some by 80%. But you understand, a stock can go down 80%, and then I think it's cheap, it's down 80%, but then it goes down another 80%. Easy.
Yep.
So all these things can happen. And what has not happened yet, which usually happens in kind of this situation, is a massive bankruptcy. Number two, the massive revelation of a massive fraud. That has been kept quiet, but when it surfaces, maybe the massive fraud is that the government goes bankrupt, or that system collapses, or a corporation or a wealthy individual, and so forth. When that happens, confidence gets badly shaken. So these things have not yet happened. In fact, as we decline from the peak in November to recently, individuals have constantly bought the dip. Yesterday and today was probably the first day when people were selling. But in general, until now, and the market is oversold. But I can tell you, from my observations over the last, say, 50 years, because I started to work in 1970, I remember the 73, 74 bear market. I tell you, at the market lows in 74, December, and in 82, August 82, and in the crash 87, October 87 was the low. And then the crash after the NASDAQ and so forth, not many people had appetite to buy anything, believe me. The mood was bearish, thick. Now it is, well, don't worry, the markets will go up again and so forth. I think it will be good for the system to have a serious recession. It would be good for societies to see that not everything is always going up, and that people make more money, and that there are no problems in the world, especially for the young generation that has never experienced any significant hardship. I mean, when I think of my grandfather, in 1910, he built a hotel in the mountains in Switzerland. It was a large hotel, luxury. Then, next thing, World War I. Then, German hyperinflation. Then the Depression years. And then World War II. And the guy built a hotel, and he went through one hardship after the other. The young generation of today, I'm not talking about specifically South Africa, but say in America and Western Europe, they've only gone through improved economic conditions. Anything happens bad, or the government will help you.
Yep.
That has to change, that people go through hardship. It's through hardship that people have character and strengths, not through soft economic environments. My advice is to be diversified. We don't know how the world will look like, but diversify your assets, have some exposure to gold, some exposure to real estate. At the moment, I think the U.S. bond market has bottomed out, not for the long run, but say for the maybe next 6 months, that bonds can rally, say, 10%, that interest rates come off somewhat because the economy is slowing down. And in my view, this is my observation, the economy is in recession already.
Yep.
I don't look so much at statistics, but I go out and observe shops, observe factories, the traffic, all this tells me something about the economy. The Federal Reserve members, they wouldn't know what the outside world looks like. None of them had ever a regular job. They're all F academics. You want to run down your business. You want to bankrupt your country. Elect academics.
Yep. They don't even do their own shopping right now, to your point. Most of those folks, there's no way they're doing their own shopping. They're probably having someone doing it for them. So they're very disconnected from reality.
They don't drive themselves. They wouldn't know how to drive.
Yep.
Do you think any of these Fed members would know how to change a wheel? They're so dumb, they wouldn't even know how to steal from a shop.
Yep. Yep. So this has been fantastic. Anyway, again, this conversation, Dr. Farber. Thank you so much for coming on and again, sharing your insights and your views right now. Where can folks learn more about you and where can they subscribe to your newsletter, which is fantastic?
Well, I have a website, gloomboomdoom.com. I mean, www.gloomboomdoom, all in one word. If they go on Google and Google my name, they will come to the website anyway.
Yep.
Hopefully they haven't erased me yet.
Well, there's a ton of value packed into those newsletters, and subscribers are getting a lot of value from your insight as all of these things unfold. And you're telling it like it is, which I appreciate in a world like today. So always appreciate you.
Okay. Thanks a lot. And good fortune to your listeners and viewers. And, you know, we had just to realize there are certain things we can control. What we can control is our reaction to, say, harsh economic conditions. We cannot control how the world is. We cannot control whether it will rain or not rain. But we can control what we do if it rains.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Nice talking to you. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for my listeners and my viewers for spending your most valuable resource, your time, once again with me on the show. Everything Cashflow Ninja is at cashflowninja.com. 850 podcast episodes, tools, resources, programs. And of course, you can grab a copy of my book, The 21 Best Cashflow Niches, Creating Wealth and the Best Alternative Cashflow Investments, available at cashflowninja.com or on amazon.com. And when you grab a copy, please screenshot a proof of your purchase and send it to my team at info@cashflowninja.com. And you'll get access to the digital version of the book, the audio version of the book, a curated library of the interviews that I did with Cashflow Ninjas discussing the niches featured in the book and more bonus goodies. Until next time, live infinitely. This presentation is for educational and informational purposes only. The information being presented and considered does not consider your particular financial objectives or situation, and it does not make personalized recommendations. This material is not intended to replace the advice of a qualified tax and legal advisor or other qualified professionals, and you should not use the information in place of a customized consultation with a licensed professional regarding your specific personal financial objectives, situation and needs. We believe the information provided is reliable, but we do not guarantee its accuracy, timeliness, or completeness.